We all talk about getting our dream job, but how far are many of us willing to go to fulfill that dream? In the case of D.L. Warfield, he needed to capture the attention of one of today's largest music moguls, and time was of the essence.
2 days later, I do a follow-up call, and it's like, yeah, you know, like the staff, like they really liked you and everything, but, you know, they just felt that you were too young and you didn't have the experience, you know, so they're actually looking at, like, some older candidates. And so I'm thinking to myself, there's no way I'm going to let somebody beat me out of that job. So on the way home, I bought these props. Fake dynamite, wind-up clock, some other shit, wiring. So I made a fake bomb, and it actually looked like a bomb. Right, so I made this bomb, and I had it attached to like a ransom note, a ransom letter where you cut the letters on and shit like that. And it says, hire D.L. Warfield to get the job or else. So I take this shit, wind it up overnight, FedEx to L.A. Reid's office. 2 hours later, they called me at work. They was like, L.A. said, you know, if you got to send down a bomb to get the job, hire his ass. I got the job.
Also on this week's episode, we discuss the importance of mentorships, the art of persistence, and how there are no replacements for working your ass off. And now, episode 4 of Culturation.
Good evening, my fellow citizens.
Are you ready? The main event of the evening.
The ideas.
It's the word that you put in.
The ability.
Can you dig it?
The talent.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
Those who influence, the entertainer, the business leader, and the entrepreneur, they're all right here on Culturation. And now, your host, Justin Epstein.
Welcome to Culturation. I'm your host, Justin Epstein. On this week's episode, we have the creative crusader, D.L. Warfield. D.L. is a roundly respected and highly accomplished artist and creative talent. A graduate of Washington University's School of Fine Arts, Warfield has had a decorated career working for such labels as Tommy Boy Records and LaFace Records, where he served as the resident art director, working on such projects and artists as Usher, Outkast, TLC, and Pink. His creative company, Goldfinger, has done work for brands such as Nike, Heineken, GMC, and Coca-Cola, to name a few. DL's continued ambition, undaunted aspiration, and personal commitment to artistic elevation pushes him to bring new ideas to creation and fearlessly pursue whatever comes next. He continues to support various community awareness programs and is intent on building cultural, social, and creative bridges through his art and speaking engagements. With that being said, I would like to welcome my good friend, D.L. Warfield, to the show. D.L., great to have you.
Man, I'm glad to be a part of it. I was excited when you first told me that you were going to do this and to see that it actually came to fruition, and I'm somebody that you're tapping into. I definitely appreciate it.
Nah, man, appreciate you having you on. So, for those that don't know about you, may not understand who you are, kind of give a little bit of a background, where you're from, all that good stuff.
So I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. You know, I moved to Atlanta in 95, but I moved here by way of New York. I've always been a true artist and a true creative kid, and I'm still a kid at heart. Like, I was the kid that got in trouble during reading time for drawing on his reading papers in second grade. I was that guy. And, you know, I've been blessed to have helped shape and mold some of the greatest talent in my lifetime. You know, I've had a pleasure working with celebrities such as Usher, Michael Jackson, Pink. Matter of fact, I was the one that convinced Pink to make her hair pink in the beginning.
Okay.
You know, so I've worked with a lot of celebrities, a lot of very, very cool brands that, you know, a lot of young people, you know, covet and worship these days, and then also some great businesses, you know. So as a kid growing up in St. Louis, you know, I wasn't always involved in arts, and I was involved in sports. And throughout my lifetime, like, those two things have always been, like, very, very synonymous. Like, I was doing art to some degree, or either playing sports or coaching sports, you know. And right in the middle of that, I think, was probably wedged music. You know, like, music has always been the blood that has fueled my passion and supported my passion in art and then also in athletics.
So do you think, you know, sports, athletics, music, fashion, all these things kind of go together, like they're all blending in kind of one similar area?
I think that they definitely do. And I think that, you know, social media and video, things like that, show people that they do faster. You know, when I was growing up, you know, like in the 80s, you couldn't see it like that. You know, so when you look at people like you know, Odell Beckham, like, you know, his creative expression on how he plays on the football field translates to his custom shoes and his tattoos and how he's done, you know, fashion, you know, like fashion projects with stores like Blooming does and things like that. Like, everything is connected now. And, you know, when I was an athlete in college, like, my art teachers didn't understand, like, why I played sports. You know, and my coaches were amazed that I was actually an artist. But I always thought that they went hand in hand from a strategy standpoint, and then also how you actually perform. You know, being able to think and adjust, and art, I think, is the exact same way.
So growing up in St. Louis, you know, the one thing that always I want to ask people is the places you were born and raised, how they shaped you. Right, and how also it led to getting into these different areas. Like, you know, when people come from New York, right, it's a certain vibe that they put into the things they do, or from Atlanta or St. Louis. St. Louis isn't a place you hear about
not at all
too often. So
not at all.
Kind of
not in a good way.
So how does that kind of like shape you? How did St. Louis, you know, kind of get you to a point where, you know, art started becoming part of life, sports started becoming life, and how it translated into those two areas?
Well, being in the Midwest, you know, like the hot spots, you know, or the coast, California, New York. So being in the Midwest, it made you dream, you know, it made you think about being in those other places, you know. So I think to that degree, like it opened your mind up, you know, and it probably made you a little bit more hungry, you know, because you on TV and in magazines, like you witness and you see what everybody else is doing. And you think about, like, what do I have to do to attain that and be on that level? Like, where do I got to go? Who do I got to meet? And so, you know, it made me always have a sense of, like, I need to work hard at something. You know, I didn't always know exactly what that is, you know, but, you know, you hear it all the time. Like, oh, you know, that person has a really good, strong Midwestern work ethic, you know? And so, like, so I guess people in the Midwest are known for being humble and working hard. You know, and as an artist, you know, I know that I'm very, very hardworking. And as an athlete, like, I was very hardworking. Yeah. So I think really, like, that is how it shaped me. And then I think also, like, I was never jaded. Like, I was never like, West Coast motherfucker. Like, you know, I was never like that. In New York, son. Like, yeah. I was never like that. Like, I was in the middle. And so musically, like, I was influenced the exact same way. Like, it was no music entertainment bias. Like, living in St. Louis, we listen to everything, you know. New York people listen to New York stuff, West Coast people listen to West Coast stuff, Midwest people, we get a hodgepodge of everybody's stuff.
So do you think, you know, a lot of people say I'm in the Midwest or I didn't have the advantage of being in New York, LA, Miami, but you make it sound like it's almost an advantage that you were in a market, or do you look at it as a disadvantage being in a market like St. Louis?
You know what, I look at it, I guess you could say, as an advantage, because I never felt that I was entitled or I deserved something based on geographically where I was located. I felt like I had to outwork everybody to get whatever it is that I was going to get, you know? And so I think that, you know, being on the coast sometimes, and I'm, you know, obviously I can't speak for everybody that's in New York or LA, but sometimes you feel like if you're there, like, you should automatically get it first. And I was like, nah, I want to try to figure out how I can come there and take the shit that you got, you know. So I think, you know, to some degree, I mean, I never even really thought about that. But I would say that, you know, it probably gives you a little bit of an advantage to work harder, because you don't have a leg up on anybody, because nothing is there. So it's like, if you're going to go to somebody else's town and try to make a name for yourself, you got to go there like shit, like a swashbuckler, like kicking ass and taking names.
Nice, man. So as far as art and sports goes, what age did you kind of start getting into that?
Well, I mean, I have drawings that I've done, you know, dating back to kindergarten that I actually still have, you know.
That's crazy.
So from my earliest memories, like, I remember drawing. I remember sitting on my grandfather's lap and asking him to draw a horse for me. Like I remember those days, you know. And then as in athletics, I mean, I probably, you know, like, I was always into, like, football and, you know, and boxing. And, you know, then I got involved in the track and field when, like, in middle school. And so those, like, track and field and football were my two sports. But, you know, I was always, like, doing sports. I was just a kid, you know, like my parents never signed me up for anything, you know what I mean? But so in the neighborhood, I was like, let's go play football, or let's play stickball or basketball, or like, you know, we actually used to box in our neighborhood, which was hilarious. But I was always doing some type of athletic activity.
So now when you went to college, where did you go to college again?
My first year I went to Southern Illinois.
Okay.
You know, and I went there on a track scholarship, and then I transferred to Washington University, which is also in St. Louis after my first year.
For sports specifically?
Well, they had, I wanted to do football and track.
Okay.
SIU was only offering me, you know, I only ran track there. And they had a great art program. So with me, like, you know, most athletes was like, yeah, I want to go to I want to go to these big schools. I was thinking, where could I go to play football and run track that has a good art program? So it's like, you know, you didn't have the power of Google to figure that out, you know? And I actually didn't hear about Washington University, even growing up in St. Louis, where it's located, until my senior year.
Wow.
You know, and so, and even getting in there, it's no joke. It's like an Ivy League school. So Wash U in St. Louis is what Emory is to Georgia or
wow.
Atlanta. And matter of fact, like, we're in the same academic conference. So I think, like, graduating, like, they take, like, the top 5% of your class, or you had to score, like, a 30 on your ACT. You know, your GPA had to be, like, a 3.8.
So I'm sitting with, like, a prodigy right now, and I didn't even know it.
Well, I guess, you know, but, you know, the funny thing is, like, I didn't get accepted right out of high school. Like, my grade point average wasn't high enough. So I had, like, a 3.4 GPA.
Solid.
Yeah, but it wasn't solid enough to get in Wash U.
Wow, man.
Because they're only taking, like, the top 5%, you know, which is crazy. So even when I think back to, like, the guys that I played football with, and like the guys who I was sitting in the locker room with, like, these guys were amazingly brilliant academically, but they were also good athletes. So you don't really see that often, you know? Like, I had a guy that I played with who actually discovered a gene, you know, and he's a doctor now, but, you know, when he was interning for St. Louis University Medical School, found a gene, and they named this gene after him. Like, he was on Good Morning America and USA Today. So those are the guys that I play football
nice.
With.
So now, when you went to the university, where was the priority as far as sports goes and art?
You know what? It was, I mean, going to a school like that, academics definitely takes precedent, because if you don't keep your grades up, your ass will be out of there. You know, and so I think that Wash U, you know, like, they compete with, like, the Harvards and the Yales. So they were not very forgiving on your academic performance. So you had to really, really step up. And even being an art student, like, the art program was so demanding and so challenging, you know? And so I only had one teacher, maybe two, in the art school that appreciated the fact that I was an artist. Everybody else was like, you're wasting your fucking time, you know? And I was like, this is my outlet, you know? And all of my coaches, I mean, were cool with it. You know, like, I was in football, I was always able to set up my class in the fall so that I could make sure I get to practice on time. You know, and then I remember having to, you know, like, one year always having to leave practice like 20 minutes early because I had, like, the art schools at that opposite end of the campus. So I'd have to go shower, get there, you know, for a 6 to 9 class after fucking football practice. This shit was crazy.
But you let know, me ask you a question, though. When you're doing all this, were you self-taught at this point in art?
You know what? I was always like, you know, the best drawer in my class.
Got it.
You know, so I was always into it. Like, I was definitely, like, my artistic ability is definitely God-given, although I do have artists on both sides of my family.
Okay.
You know, and so even going back to high school, man, like, I was, or even elementary school, like, I remember teachers getting me out of my class to go draw something on the board in their class, you know, and I just thought it was cool because I got to leave class.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't understand that people were actually, like, recognizing a talent that I had. I just thought it was cool to be able to get out of my class.
So you weren't really looking at it as a career or
not
a goal
really,
at this point, just something
really,
that you...
No, I just love to do it, you know, and, like, I remember in high school, like, I took some really good advice, and you might, you know, you're younger than me, but you should probably remember, like, in the TV guide magazines, they would have, it was a company called Art Instruction Schools, where they're like, can you draw a tippy? You know, and so you draw a tippy, you mail it in, or you draw the pirate, mail it in, and they'll call you back if they think you got talent. So, you know, I was one of the ones that drew tippy, mailed it in, and we got a call from Art Instruction School. So they had a sales rep that came through St. Louis, came by our house, and it's like, hey, you should sign up. You know, and it wasn't something that we could really afford to do. You know, so he just left us with some really good advice. He was like, you know, if you're an artist, you got to let the world know, you know. And so he asked me, he was like, are you involved in the school yearbook? And I was like, nah, I don't, you know. He's like, well, you know, they need people to do artwork, illustration, et cetera. It's like, are you on the yearbook staff? No. Well, they need people to draw cartoons and things like that. So, like, that following year, I think it was like my senior year, I made sure and I signed up for the journalism program, and I was like the illustrator for the yearbook and the cartoonist for the newspaper. And I actually won like the state championship categories for both my senior year. Wow. You know? And so it's like it went on my resume, but it was kind of like when you always do something, and you probably know this, like things that you have as a talent, like sometimes you can take it for granted, you know, until other people actually recognize and point it out and say, hey, you did a great job at that. You know, so I think that I took this advice and I won those awards, but it wasn't really like connecting.
Yeah.
Not at all, man. Not at all. And so, but I think like one point that it started to sink in, like we had Edison Brothers was based in St. Louis. It's a big fashion apparel company. So, I mean, they were massive. They had at least 9 divisions, and each division might have 300 plus stores. You know, so it was a clothing store called Oak Tree, you know, and so anybody that grew up in the 80s, if you didn't shop at Oak Tree, your shit was whack. You know, so comparatively now,
would you compare it to today?
Probably like Express.
Okay.
You know, it was Young Men's Contemporary.
Got
affordable.
It.
Right. And so they had a specific brand in there called You Men, and I remember I used to go into the stores and like tear the tags off because there was always these cool fashion illustrations. So I would tear them off and just like draw them, you know, and just keep them. And I remember like we had in our art school, we had one of the illustrators come that did those illustrations, and he was actually black. And so I was like, damn, like I think seeing like an African American man that was working as a designer, illustrator, I was like, shit, I could be that too, you know? So it took me seeing that to really, like, make me start thinking I'm going to have to be an architect, you know? Because before then, like, if you could draw, you're going to be an architect. And I was like, well, fuck, I mean, I guess, you know, like, if that's what my options are,
yeah,
you know? But even with all that, like, when I first went to college, like, I was thinking about actually getting my degree in zoology because I was like, yeah, because I was always into
zoology.
Animals. Exactly, exactly. But I was always into animals.
Okay.
You know, like reptiles and all that kind of shit. So I was like, maybe I can do that, you know, and maybe be on TV, you know. And but when I looked at kind of like the career path, I was like, nah, I'm not doing this shit. So I was like, let me just, like, kind of really figure out and investigate, you know, the art thing. So my senior year in high school, another thing that happened to me that was really, really cool, and I didn't really appreciate the full effect of what was going on until years later, is that, like, I had really good art teachers in high school, you know, like Jack Schleter, Joanne Strimstifer, like, they were awesome teachers.
And you still remember their names to this day.
Absolutely.
That's how much of an impact they
absolutely
made.
Absolutely. You know, and I remember like, my senior year, like, they talked to my counselor and the principal, and they were like, we want to build an art studio for him in the art department and let him come down here and just do shit as long as he gets his other work done. And I was like, you know, I was like, damn, I ain't got to go to social studies. You know, I'm thinking like that versus, like, what is really going on, you know? And so I actually had an art studio within the art department, and I could go in the morning, go by my classes, get the work assignment, and then just go down in my studio and just paint and make art and shit. And then at the end, I would either go to football and track practice. But to me, like, that's fucking amazing that these teachers did that, you know? But it didn't take to, like, years later and probably in an interview that I really reflected and thought about how amazing that shit was.
Did you ever reach back out to him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, not like, I can't find Sleater, but me and Miss Strumtifer were friends on friends on Facebook. Yeah, and you know some other funny shit that happened on Facebook, man. Like, I posted a picture that I did when I was in kindergarten, and like, I don't know if you ever did this, but we used to have they used to give a project where they would let you draw on plates.
Yeah.
And then they'd make the plate.
Yeah, we had it.
Right. So I remember being pissed because, like, I wanted to draw mine in pencil first and then fill it in with the marker. And the teacher was like, well, you're going to put a hole in it with the pencil. You can't do it. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And I was like, I could draw it better if you let me draw it with pencil first versus just having to draw it with marker. So I posted that image on Facebook, and I just put the story down just to really, like, maybe inspire other people with kids who have talent. My kindergarten teacher commented on it.
Come on.
Yo, yeah, Mrs. Lark, fuck me up, man. So I was like, holy shit, Mrs. Lark is on Facebook. And so every now and then, like, she'll post, like, she'll comment on stuff. But she's like, I still remember that drawing. You were such a talented artist. But, you know, that's crazy, man. It's crazy. So
there's been a lot of people that obviously have, like, affected you, played a role or an impact in your life.
Absolutely.
For younger people, right, I feel like a lot of times they all think these folks are self-made, right, and people didn't help them get there.
Right.
Mentorship, right, is like one of the big things I always look at, and I'm like, go meet people, talk to people.
Right.
What can kids do differently, or people just in general, like, get, are they afraid, or is it a comfort thing, is it an ego thing, do you think? Like,
I think it's a mixture of all of that. And I think, you know, like, whenever I talk to kids, you know, in schools or whatever, or any type of speaking event, like, I tell them, first thing, you got to put your fucking phone down. You know, like, you can't, if you want some shit, like, if you want some stuff from me, like, unless I tell you to text me, or, like, pick up the phone and call, you know, whatever it is that you want, pick up the phone and call. And, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of our kids have been hamstrung by the fact that they really don't know how to communicate, not just with people, but even just communicate their idea. You know, everything is, like, abbreviated, you know, and so I tell them, it's like, if you're trying to sell me on an idea, like, you can't abbreviate the conversation. Like, you got to be able to explain it, you know. So I think that, one, if you just do that, like, you're ahead of the game. You know, if you could actually sit down and talk to an adult, you're so much far ahead of the game, because most people don't feel comfortable with it. And then, you know, you need to be humble and don't be afraid to ask questions, because you don't know everything. Like, it's, you know, if you're 17 years old, like, whatever you think that you should be doing now, this shit is going to change in 2 years. And then it's going to change again. And then it's going to keep changing again, because you're still learning. Like, I'm 48 years old and I'm still learning shit. And I'm still trying to figure things out and things like that. Like, and even though, like, I've had some successes, like, by no means do I think that I have the solution. The only thing that I know that has always worked is to work my ass off. That's it.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. So now let's go back to the department store. So you graduate high school. You mm-hmm. go on to college.
Right.
You dual sports, as right. if one sport's not enough, now
right,
you got to do
right,
two.
Right.
And you're going to study art.
Correct.
Right? So what's kind of the next step, evolution, as you graduate from college? What's the first job? What's the next move?
Well, you know what? Like, when I was in school, I mean, like, I really, really had dreams of, like, playing professional football. Like, that was, like, really, like, that's what I thought I was going to be doing.
So that was the goal.
That was definitely the goal.
What was the team, by the way? Yeah, I know you had a team in mind that you wanted to play for.
You know what? I honestly did not care. I mean, I had you know, I had teams come in to check me out when
you
I was
did?
In school. Yeah, so I had, like, at that time it was the Houston Oilers, who was now the Tennessee Texans, but they came, like, the Cleveland Browns came, you know, and then I worked out, you know, I had a combine workout and things like that. So I thought, and I actually signed to, like, a really big sports agent. So I thought that I would be doing it. And then, you know, after everything settled, you know, like, I had opportunities to play in Canada. And, you know, I think the biggest it was two deterrents. One, you know, who you know, like, my wife Lisa, who was my girlfriend at the time, you know, or my fiance or whatever. But her, and then I had a friend that played up there, and he was a really good college player. And he's like, man, if you have options, don't do it, because of the way that the contracts were structured. And you don't make, like, at that time, you weren't making that much money. You were making, like, $23,000-$24,000.
Yeah.
Then you got to get a job, you know. And so, like, my first job, I was making more than what he was making, you know, that I ended up taking. So, you know, I think that, like, and then even after my first workout, you know, and when I didn't get picked up by anybody from the NFL, And like some other people's like, man, you just got to keep going. Like as an athlete, I think that was the first time that I actually regretted doubting myself, because I don't know what would have happened if I would have tried again. And like I told Lisa, I was like, I'll try this shit one time, and if it don't work out, I'm moving on. You know, because I've also seen stories of people, like, you know, in their 30s still trying to make the team. I'm like, dog, it's probably a wrap. You know, so I didn't really want to put my life on hold for that. You know, and so, but still, it's like, it kind of haunts me sometimes when, like, you know, when I just think back and I seen guys that I used to, like, really train with and off-season and things like that, who actually stuck with it, made it, had a little bit of career, and then kind of moved on. I was like, man, I used to kick their ass on the field, you know. So, you know, I had that, you know, and I thought that's where I was going to be, but obviously it didn't work out. But then also, you know, like something that was cool that happened to me my senior year in college, like a guy that graduated a year or like 2 years before I did, he was an art, he got his degree in advertising. And so he told one of his reps, or, you know, one of his vendors about me, who was actually like a talent rep for illustration or photography, about me. So I actually had like an agent for illustration when I was a senior in college. So I was working for like Anheuser-Busch and Chicago Tribune newspaper and Playboy magazine when I was my senior year playing football in college.
So you weren't even graduating yet, and you already had an agent. I didn't even know they had agents in illustration.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they were called reps. So just like how you have people that maybe rep other services now. Yeah, like she was my rep. She was based out of Chicago. Her name is Joni Toot. And so she was getting me, you know, illustration projects. So I was getting like big ass checks.
Yeah.
You know, working outside of football, you know, for these for these different brands.
But at that point, you're still thinking, I want to go play football.
Oh, yeah, I'm playing. So I'm in the NFL, baby.
Were you? So were you thinking at this point, though, like you're getting these checks, you're working with some of the most recognizable brands in the world, are you still not, is it not hitting you in the head still, like, this, I got something here, like, this is special?
Nope. I was like, this is gonna be my side shit.
So,
you know,
do you think, let me ask you, like, almost being ignorant to, like, what was happening in a sense, or, like, not even mindful of, like, the extent of how impactful it was, do you think that actually helped you?
Probably, because I think that if I really started thinking about it, I would have overthought it. You know what I mean? So at that thing, I was just like, I need the money, and so I don't care what the project is, you know? Like, I just need the money. So I was able to operate a little freely versus thinking. The minute that it becomes, like, the minute it would have became my job, things would have tightened up, you know? And you know how it is. It's I think sometimes, like, commitments like that to working suck the instincts right out of you. And so at that point, I was just, you know, like my artwork, I was really functioning on instincts, you know, and the instinct was like really at its rawest, like, I don't have any money. I need money. This illustration shit gets me money.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep doing this illustration stuff.
How many people do you think miss it, like have a God-given talent or something that they're just really good at, and they don't look at it as special, or that it can be a career? Because a lot of these street artists now are making crazy money.
Right.
Right? These are graffiti art. I mean, look at somebody like Kaws.
Right.
He was a graffiti artist, and now is one of the most famous artists in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Doing something that they just love to do.
Right.
But most people don't think, a lot of times, I feel like, that love can transpire into dollars or to career.
Right.
Right? So do you feel like it's something that people need to sometimes be more conscious of, and at an earlier age start to look like, what am I doing? What's coming natural? Right. And invest into that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you're young and if you could think like that, like, you're magical, you know, because I think that I just don't really see most young people really seeing it that way, you know, but then you do have prodigies. So just say like Usher, for instance. I mean, he was putting a mash down when he was like a little kid, you know? So I think that, you know, but I mean, he had the blessing of having, you know, his mom, Janetta, around him that was like, hey, like, you're going to be a star.
Yeah. Help them navigate.
Yeah. And so a lot of times young people don't have like those navigational tools. And I know that it's like I did, but I didn't, you know, like I had, you know, so just say like my art teachers in high school, like they were creating a pathway for me to get
there.
They
saw it before you saw it.
Absolutely. And then I had some great internships, and I had like a few mentors that did the exact same shit. And it's like, and I just really learned from watching them, you know? And then I think like, you know, being in St. Louis and being from humble beginnings, like I just remember, like I remember driving around and me and some of my friends, or me and Lisa, we would drive around to nice ass neighborhoods and be like, damn, like what do we got to do to like be able to live like that? You know, so a lot of times things that I did were kind of, you know, I aimed it at getting to like that. Like I was equating successful with like a big house and a nice car. And I was just like, okay, I want to get out of my neighborhood and get into that neighborhood. So what do I got to do? Who do I got to meet? And things like that. But going back, like, I think, you know, like if you're a young person and if you're blessed to like have people to help you navigate and get to that, I think that is great. And then I also think that, you know, people have to understand that it's not going to be overnight. You know, some people's stuff will be overnight, you know, but 99 times out of 100, it's not going to be overnight. So I think that if you love it and you really believe in it and you're passionate about it, I think that that's what should drive you. And I think that, you know, if you understand that sometimes it might take you a little time to get there, but if you give it everything that you got, like God is going to all make it, it's going to make it work out for you. And, you know, so I think when I was growing up, and people probably still do this today, but like people would deter you from being an artist. They're like, because they say starving artist, you're going to be a starving artist. And I'm like, well, nah, I don't really plan on like starving and shit. Like I'm going to take my art to make money.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, and that is like one of the reasons why I always tell kids when I go to speak at schools and things like that, like everything in this room right now has to be designed by an artist, every single thing. So whether you're like painting on canvases or spraying on walls or actually doing things on a CAD machine, like artists create that, you know. And so if you have a talent, there's a job for you. You just got to figure out what it is that you want to do.
I mean, something you said a little while ago, which resonated with me and I think will resonate with a lot of people, is you said like, what's the goal? And you're like, work hard, work
right.
your ass off,
right?
Like there's really no secret formula in all
there
this.
Isn't all of the self-help books that people have read and that I've read, I mean, it just gets down to like that fundamental thing, like work your ass off.
I just read something, I think it was like the other day, I was looking online or reading an article, and somebody was like, if you put in 30 minutes of work, you're going to get 30 minutes worth of results.
Absolutely.
Like, you know what I'm saying? And I'm sitting here going, if you dedicate the time, it's going to come, right?
Right.
The shit's going to eventually evolve.
Right.
A lot of people quit when they're like right at that brink of success.
Right.
And then they pull back. Like for football, right? You could have easily said at any point, like, I want to keep on going.
Mm-hmm.
But something inside you said, no, like you listen to your intuition though in a certain sense as
right,
well.
Right.
How much of your gut plays a role in your decision making?
I think that the first thing that pops into your head is usually like the right decision.
Yeah.
And then I think you analyze it and you start to weigh it against other things and things like that. But I think that you know, like I'm 100% believer in instincts, even if it's the bad shit.
Yeah.
You know,
there's
but sometimes
a reason for
you got to do the bad shit to get the good shit. Like if something that happened yesterday and I was going to post something on social media and Lisa was like, don't do it. You know, and I knew what would have happened.
See, this is the platform
that
you
can do it. Yeah. I knew what would have happened and I knew the cause and effect and how it would have made a whole bunch of chaos. But sometimes I believe you just got to cause chaos. You know, and then just to get shit out. But at any rate, she suppressed me, and I didn't do it.
Listen,
you know?
You got to listen to your wife, right?
Right, right.
So,
right.
Oh, I always just say yes.
Right.
So, you know, now you're doing these designs, right, for Budweiser, Playboy, while you're still in your college,
mm-hmm.
have a rep the whole nine,
mm-hmm.
right? So kind of what evolves from here? What's kind of the next step?
Well, you know, like I was ended up getting internships at Edison Brothers.
Okay.
You know, and like I interned there 2 years, and they end up creating a job position for me. And like when somebody creates a position for you, it's like there's no job description. It's like, yeah, we're going to make you this, but nobody knew what the fuck that was.
At this point, though,
yeah.
kind of like high school, and they made an art room for you. Did you realize that they're doing something
no,
big for you?
Because you know what? Not. I mean, well, I did, but.
But not to the degree.
Right. Not to the degree because nobody knew how to guide me, you know, And so I was just there, like, in my office, and I was just doing shit. But, you know, I was like, man, like, if they were smart, they could have used me better than they did. And so even when I think back about, so my job title was, like, product developer designer. So what I did was, like, I designed some of the apparel. I designed the packaging, right? And then they would fly me around and kind of, like, I would shop the markets with them. And then I would come back and kind of, like, reinterpret what we have seen on the street level as it relates to fashion, kind of reinterpret it, redesign it, and then we would take that cool shit and make it for the masses.
Okay.
So I was doing this at, like, I mean, that was my very first job, and then I actually started designing, like, you know, retail concept stores, you know. But to get to that, I mean, it took a guy who I interned for. His name was Walt Liebert. He actually played football in college. So I interned in his department. And then there's another guy named Derek Tucker, who was the president of the Oak Tree. But I think both of these guys, like, they definitely seen talent in me, which is why they created this position for me, you know. But it was because I was, like, an anomaly. Like, they didn't know exactly how to use me. So yeah. Some days I would be doing a bunch of shit, and some days I wouldn't, you know. So if I had somebody to work under, I probably could have been more productive. But, like, I remember things like, like, we would go to the Magic Show in Vegas, you know, the men's apparel. Yeah, so I would go to that. And then we might walk into, like, some vendor's booth. I can look at their shit. And then I can walk out, draw it, fax it to India, and have them start working on it. You know what I mean? Like, I could do gangster shit like that. So they would use me like that in some ways, which was funny. You know, it was before camera phones. So I guess I was, like, the first iPhone.
That's,
you know, as far as doing shit
like a mobile fax machine.
Absolutely.
See, what's crazy, man, is, like, that I don't even want to use the word failures. Like, the things that didn't work out, like football and other things, kind of in a way led you to this direction in your life, right? Whether you knew it or not, indirectly, it started to happen.
Absolutely.
So,
like, pathways are always being carved out, whether you like it or not. You know, they're always being carved out. And so, I mean, I definitely have. You know, even though, like, sometimes I think about the football stuff, like, I really don't have any regrets about not, you know, not really pursuing it, because I think that, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to be doing what you're supposed to do regardless of if you like it or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, also, I think, so, you know, you talked about where you grew up, limited opportunities in some regard, right, not being in the bigger cities.
Right.
Some people would automatically, just like a lot of things in life, say, I'm at a disadvantage, or say, you know, that's it, I quit.
Right.
You didn't look at it that way. You looked at almost everything that was negative as, like, an opportunity versus a disadvantage.
Correct.
You know?
Correct. And, you know, I mean, like, my family, even though, like, you know, like, nobody really went to college or anything like that, and they just had, for the most part, you know, pretty much basic, you know, just basic jobs, but they were always supportive, you know? So, like, sometimes they might not have known what exactly I was fucking doing, but they were just like, good job, baby. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I kind of got, you know?
So that was huge, man, obviously.
Yeah, because it's like you can have a family that don't know shit and don't support you.
So that's my thing, right, is a lot of kids don't have that foundation sometimes.
Correct.
Or people in life in general, I don't care how old you are. You could be 30, 40, 50. You don't have people that support your vision or what you're doing.
Right.
What do you recommend, or what would you suggest for people that are dealing with that to push that shit to the side and stay focused?
Man, like, One of my favorite quotes that I came up with, and this came from just, like, working with young athletes, is that nobody cares about your excuses. So you could have the most fucked up childhood experience. Nobody cares, man. Like, even if they run it on CNN, like, nobody really cares about it. And so it's like, when you understand that, then you understand, well, you're going to have to be the one responsible for tying your shoes up. You're going to have to be the one responsible for getting up and actually going outside. Like, you just got to try to make the best out of every single thing that you have. And know that, like, as bad as you think your situation is, it's somebody that would die to trade places with you. I don't care where you are.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think that, like, to me, like, that is something that young people and even some older people, like, you really have to understand. And it's like, you know, you can't. At some point, like, it has to be a cutoff or expiration date on when you know when you're blaming your situation or other people for your failures.
Yeah,
you have to cut it off because it's not productive. And if you want to make progress, like, you just kind of got to keep moving forward. And I could have easily been somebody that was like, you know, everything is against me, but like, that's not going to get you anywhere. Yeah. You know?
I'll tell you, man, that's one of the – so this whole podcast, the crazy thing is I started it because, you know, obviously I want to tell people stories. I want to get people inspired, talk right. to different people that have influenced. The crazy thing, though, is hearing things like you say, things like that, this shit motivates me. Like, I get to be a fan on this right. on this podcast, so I'm learning as I go.
Right.
Right? Like, I have no experience in this.
Right.
But for me, this is the type of stuff that I value and the reason why I think this is important because – this is stuff that people need to hear, right? Right? And people also need to be able to relate. Like you said when you're talking earlier, you saw the first dude that came and was drawing, and it was the first black guy you'd ever see
right.
drawing in that space. You all of a sudden relate to it.
Correct.
You're like, okay, if he can do it, I can do it. So a lot of times I think now it's not just visual anymore. People can hear, people can use their iPhones, they can go on things and mm-hmm. say, yo, DL did it. Look at DL's story. I'm in a similar position.
Right.
So for me, that's kind of one of the dopest aspects of all this. And kind of honestly, their whole premise behind this is to make people say, look, shit's going to get rough. Life has a lot of hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to do to get over them?
Right.
And what are you going to do to make it happen?
I mean, when you think about like the greatest stories that have ever been told, I mean, from the Bible to like pop culture, like every hero has had some shit to overcome. That a lot of times is bigger than whatever it is that you had to deal with.
Yeah. And they
came up out of it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And they achieved great things. So I think that, you know, to get to, you know, like the promised land or, you know, or wherever it is you want to be, like you got to walk uphill and you got to fight the monsters and you got to conquer and overcome or you won't be able to keep it, sustain it, and you definitely won't appreciate it.
Love it, man. So now you end up working in the clothing apparel space, right. designing, product design, packaging. Right. How do you end up into the music world?
So from Edison Brothers in the Oak Tree, I ended up getting hired by Tommy Boy Records in New York to start their clothing brand. So they're like the first record label with a clothing brand. But yeah. before that, I had a combine workout down here in Atlanta. And so when I was down here, I met people at LaFace Records and they ended up buying like two paintings that I did out of my senior thesis for L.A. Reid of Miles Davis.
Wow.
And so he was a huge Miles Davis fan. So I met this lady named Yvette Singletary. I was like, man, I would love to work here. You know, this office reminds me of Boomerang, all this kind of stuff, right? So, you know, at the time they didn't have the funding to hire somebody in that capacity. So, you know, obviously nothing happened with football. Ended up taking a job at Tommy Boy in New York. Hated Tommy Boy. Like, the best thing about Tommy Boy, I tell everybody, was the softball team. You know, and the reason why I didn't like it is because, like, they didn't give me an opportunity to do anything. And so the first 3 or 4 months, I was like, yo, this job sucks. You know, I can't do shit.
Just
like, they just want, they just want, like, promo items to give away. Like, not everybody wears a triple X rugby, you know, but that was all they were, like, into, yeah. and it was suck. So, like, man, somebody gave me a book called Think and Grow Rich.
Right? Great book, by the way.
And so I started reading it, and I'm like, yo, fuck this. I'm not going to let them, like, kill my creative spirit, so... Like, at lunchtime, every lunch period, I started going out to agencies and other record labels meeting people, right? And so I started freelancing for, like, Bad Boy, for, like, Puffy. Just anybody that I can find, like, I was doing projects for. So because they weren't letting me use my creativity, I was, like, I was going out other places and getting it done, right? And I remember, like, I had one funny story of a guy that I ended up meeting up there named Chuck Bone up in New York. He worked for Uptown Records. And, I flew up there. I took the subway up to meet him or a taxi or something, but I didn't have, it was something crazy where I didn't have money to get back and I had to be back at a certain time. So I was like, man, look, I know you just met me, you know, but shit.
Tell me,
like,
you asked him for a ride.
Yes. Oh, and he gave it to me. You know what I mean?
Wow,
and
man.
So to get back, it is funny, man. And I remember, like, so a year later, I ended up getting a job for LaFace Records, but I was up in New York for an event for Vibe magazine. I seen him. I was like, yo, I gave him his money back, and he just busted out laughing.
I'll tell you, man, you know? They always say your network is your net worth. Like, truest thing out.
Right, right. So, you know, so I'm in New York working for, this is a cool story. So I'm in New York working for Tommy Boy. Hate the job. It was cool people there, but like I said, it just... Like, they weren't really ready to do, like, a clothing company. And so they hired me, and I was, like, they just, They just needed really somebody to do graphic tees, basically.
Yeah.
And so I get a call one day, and it was from Devette Singletary, and she was like, "Hey, so you happy where you at?" And I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" She's like, "Well, you know, we got funding, and we'd like to talk to you about being our creative director." I'm like, "I'm all in," right? So they ended up flying me down for an interview. Interview went great, right? So I come back. 2 days later, I do a follow-up call, and it's like, yeah, you know, like the staff, like they really liked you and everything, but, you know, they just felt that you were too young and you didn't have the experience, you know, so they're actually looking at, like, some older candidates. And so I'm thinking to myself, there's no way I'm going to let somebody beat me out of that job. And so, but even, like, when me and Lisa moved to New York, like, we kind of had to plan, like, we'll be in New York for 2 years and then we're going to end up in Atlanta. So when I heard, like, when I got off the phone, I told my boss, I was like, yo, I'm not feeling well, I need to go home, you know. So I went home. On the way home, though, I bought these props. Fake dynamite, wind-up clock, some other shit, wiring. So I made a fake bomb, and it actually looked like a bomb, right? So I made this bomb, and I had it attached to, like, a ransom note, a ransom letter where you cut the letters on and shit like that. And it says, hire D.L. Warfield to get the job or else. So I take this shit, wind it up overnight at FedEx at the L.A. Reed's
office.
Come on. No, this was like in 94, 95. FedEx to L.A. Reed's office. 2 hours later, they called me at work. They was like, L.A. said, you know, if you got to send down a bomb to get the job, hire his ass. I got the job, you know.
Holy
and
shit.
That, yeah, so, but that, like, so taking that type of risk. But back then, like, it wasn't the same.
But you took the initiative,
like,
though. You know what
absolutely.
I'm saying?
I'm like,
take,
this.
People take no
right,
and they just walk.
Right, right. And I was never, like, and I think, like, that comes from being an athlete. I'm like, yo, you back me into a corner. I'm fighting my way out. I'm not going to ask you to get, as you let me go. I'm like, I'm getting this fucking job. Like, that's how I was, you know. And so that's what happened. But.
So when you ended up at LaFace. Get the creative director position.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just touch on some of the albums that you created, because
right.
Some of the most iconic. First off, I learned about some of these albums that I didn't even know, and I've known you for 10 years that you did.
Mm-hmm.
That I was like, I had no idea. Like number
right.
one, Outkast,
right?
AT Aliens.
That was a great project, and I think that I think as a creative director, I would probably say like that was the project that put me on the map, because before then, like, L.A., LaFace's stuff, it was always pretty standard. It was always classic looking, like, R&B.
Yeah.
Like, everything looked R&B. Like, all of the hip-hop
like
stuff
the lighting,
looked R&B.
Like, the lighting,
yeah,
smile.
Everything, everybody had a hat. Everything was sepia-toned, you know what I mean? Like, cursive font.
Cursive font, yeah.
Yeah, so, but, man, I remember still to this day, like my office was, like, in the back by L.A.'s office, so he had, like, a big, he had like, you know, like a big, you know, like a reception area. And so his office and Face's office was on one side and mine was on the other. And so, like, I remember, like, we were just standing out there talking. Big and Dre walked in and they were like, we got the title of the album. And L.A. was like, what? And they said, AT Aliens. I was like, oh, shit, we need to do a comic book out of that. They're like, let's do it. And that's literally how fast it happened. And so at that time, that's when, like, Todd McFarlane's comic book stuff, you know, Spawn and everything
yeah.
was, like, super popular. It was, like, a resurgence with, like, Dark Horse and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, we got to do a comic book. So the cast was into it from the jump. And so that project was very, very collaborative because we had, you know, they were into it. I used Big Rule from the Dungeon Family to write the storyline. Like, within my office, like, it was Nigel Sawyer, Vince. I forgot Vince's last name. But they did the interior, you know, like coloring and the layouts and the cover illustration. It came from a sketch that I did. So I did a sketch for composition. And then I found a guy that worked for Todd McFarlane. His name was Frank Gomez. And I had him do the actual illustration and we colored it in-house.
Wow.
You know, so it was like it was assembling. It was like, you know, it was the first time that I really got the opportunity to assemble all of these kind of great designers and writers and get feedback from the guys and
yeah.
create something that was
so that was like
super
your
dope.
First true art direction.
Yeah,
sense.
Yeah, because other than that, I mean, it was pretty much like being at a photo shoot and, you know, nah, change that background and put that clothes,
yeah.
those clothes on, you know. But
that's
that
great.
Was like, you know, so it was a very, very fun project to work
and
on.
And honestly, one of the most iconic albums of all time.
Yeah, like it was a great album, man. It's, you know, I love the fact that, you know, they carried the look of the album cover onto like the very first Elevators video and things like that. So everything was really, really cohesive.
That was one of the first. I was living in South Florida when that came out.
Okay.
And that was one of the first albums I ever heard that made me want to be from Atlanta.
Listen, when the first time that I heard Players Ball, I was like, I fucking want to live in Atlanta. Like, I remember being in St. Louis. It was cold. That shit came on the radio. I could not believe. I was like, who is this? And then when I found out that L.A. Reid and Babyface was a part, you know, the same L.A. Reid and Babyface behind The Deal and Pebbles and Bobby Brown and all of these people, I was like, they on to something.
I mean, when you started hearing lyrics like, it's the M.I. crooked letter, but knowing better, and when I'm on the microphone. Like, to hear that.
Or cooler than a polar bear's toenails.
Like, those are lines that I still remember to this day. So that's when I was like, all right, Atlanta, man, is where I want to be. At that point, Atlanta wasn't really on the map.
Right.
You know what
I'm saying? It wasn't on the map at all for hip-hop.
So, you know, shout out to Outkast.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely changed, you know, and I tell everybody, like, they're the greatest hip-hop group ever. Yeah. And if they put an album out now, it would be the greatest hip-hop duo album ever, you know. So
yeah, man.
Big Drake, put that album out, baby. Come on, man.
You heard it here. We'll do the first song we'll release on Culturation.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Hopefully, it'll let me get an advance.
So I want to run through, you know, some of the albums, and I want to jump to the art right quick.
Okay.
So what are some of the other albums? Because I know there was some pretty big names, Michael and a
few others. like the Michael Jackson thing. That was cool, and that was another thing that I actually had to compete for. You know, so like after he passed, like I got a call from Motown's president's office, and they were like, hey, like we're interested in using you to redesign, you know, like some of his classic Motown. We're putting like this classic box set is going to be remixed by all of these hot DJs like Steve Aoki and things like that. You know, I was like, okay, cool. That's like, yeah, but you're going to have to like put everything together and get it back to us on Monday. They called me on a Friday, and so I'm like, you know, and at that point, like, everything was on spec. Like, they wanted to see what I did versus what they had, you know. So, you know, I'm always pissed off when somebody asked about spec work, but hey, it's Michael Jackson, you know. So at any rate, I did it, and they loved the shit that I did, and I ended up getting the project, you know.
Nice,
so the cool thing about that was that, like, I got access to like all of their images. So I got some super cool images of Michael and his brothers and sisters as kids and things like that to actually build the packaging from, you know. And a funny thing is, like, now, like, even in, like, pop culture and just social media, like, I see people using the image that I created in all different types of formats.
It's great. When you think about it, a lot of your work, right, you look at people like Outkast.
Right.
Jeezy.
Right.
Usher. TLC.
Right.
Has kind of shaped the look and feel for ATL.
Yeah. I mean, I never really thought about that, but, you know, you're probably right because, I mean, musically, those artists not only shaped Atlanta, but they also helped shape the way the world makes music. And so to be a part of that, you know, it was something awesome to be a part of. You know, even like, I mean, like Toni Braxton, even though I just did one project for her, and that was straight R&B, but like Pink was another fun one to work with. You know, and who else in Atlanta? I mean, T.I. Like, I remember the first time he came into the office, and I was like, yo, who is this little motherfucker? Like, he came in like the president, you know? But when people have it, like he was one of the ones that I was like, yo, this dude is a star.
Yeah.
You know, even though he didn't have, like, that big first album, but his confidence and, you know, one, I mean, he was talented, but his confidence and his belief in himself was like Muhammad Ali-like. You know what I'm saying? Like, regardless, I'm not going to get deterred. And I think another person that was like that I worked with was Pink. You know, and I think, you know, Pink was on the label for like 3 years before we put her out because she was in a group.
Yeah.
You know, but the very, very, they came and actually auditioned to perform live for LaFace. And as soon as she opened her mouth up and you seen her performance, she was like, she's a superstar, you know. And I remember doing like her first photo shoot down in South Beach, and we were walking down Collins, and she was just telling me like how her career was gonna go, and I was just looking at her like, shut the fuck up, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've heard it all before, because at that point you had, but you could not deny that she wasn't mega talented and she was like a superstar. So like all of the success that she has now, I'm not surprised, because she was that good, and she had a clear, like she was seeing herself.
Yeah.
You know, and the things that she talked about, they were not far-fetched, but they were not like, you know, it wasn't going to be immediate. You know what I mean?
She's definitely one of those people now, though. Like, when you see her perform live, she puts a lot of people on notice. Like, you got to step up your game.
Yeah.
Like, people that can't sing and dance. I mean, this girl's upside down, doing Cirque du Soleil.
And I think that, like, you know, like, I don't think that, well, I mean, people know now, but I think back then, like, I don't think people did not know how good she could actually really sing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like she could hold her own with the best of them.
That's amazing. You know? Yeah. So, obviously, successful career up until this point, right? It's evolved from fashion to music. And now we're going to get to the current place, the artist.
Right.
The
where the passion is.
Where the passion is, where I got two paintings in my house.
As you should.
As everyone should.
As everyone should.
Make sure you get a piece commissioned by DL or go online. Shout out the website real quick.
Right, dlwarfield.com. Hey, you better hurry up, too, because prices are going up.
Oh, I tell everybody, you heard it here first.
I tell all of my friends, man. I'm like, yo, prices are going up. Like, they're going up. So if you didn't support when you really had the chance to get me at my you know, like my Ford Explorer state, now you got to come in at the Bentley truck state.
Oh, so I want to just kind of quickly run through to let everybody know kind of like what your art is, what it's about, what it stands for. Because a lot of your stuff is almost like inspired by your career, right? Like music, sports, but then also you work a lot in the community. You work with sports teams. You work with kids in different programs. And a lot of social, cultural issues also are translated into those elements as well.
Right. So, you know, like we said in the beginning, I mean, you know, like from an artist standpoint, like everything that I do is pretty much fueled by like music, sports, and definitely like, you know, things that are happening socially. And, you know, I work and I create two bodies of work. So one body of work is pretty much like pop cultural stuff. I mean, pop art. That's the fast way to explain it. But like, I see that stuff being like fashion. And I think that when a lot of people see that work, like they don't know that like I could actually paint and I actually draw, you know. But I started doing the pop art because, one, I like the faster, more immediate results you get. And I wanted to feel the same way you feel when you're walking past the Gucci store and you see some shit in the window and it just grabs you like that. Like that, you know, so I actually consider that work to be like fashion. Like I consider my art more like fashion than fine art. And then the other body of work is the work that I call the American Flag Remix, which is definitely fun. And so, like, I started creating those, which are basically like American flags that I build out of wood, and then I add different aesthetics to it. So one aesthetic can be concrete and steel. The other aesthetic could be silk screen and photo transfer and things like that. And, you know, I like doing them for multiple reasons. One, the composition is done. You know, like, I don't have to think about it. It's 13 stripes and 50 stars, you know? And so at that point, I just figured out like what the messaging is. And, you know, so when I'm working on like my other work that's more painterly or more the pop cultural mixed media stuff, like you have to think about it like the whole time that you're working on it, because every stroke counts, every color decision counts, you know? So working on the American flag stuff, in between that, it almost gives me a break to think about stuff in the back of my mind while I'm just executing other stuff, you know. So you know, but it's funny, like you know, we talked about me working and having an illustration rep, and like I remember like the last illustration project that I did, it was like a series for Black Enterprise, and after I did it was like I think five issues. After I did it, I told my wife, I'm like, yeah, I'm not drawing shit else. Like, I was just burnt out of just, like, taking all of these projects and just changing things like that. And the process takes so long versus financially what the compensation always ends up being. So I was like, it's just not fun. Like, I hated that shit. So at that point, like, probably from 2006 to 2012, like, I wasn't making any art. I was only doing design and strategy stuff. And so in 2012, I was sick of all of the design and strategy stuff I was doing. So I'm like, fuck that, I'm gonna start painting again, you know? And so that is what's like really refueled like the renaissance that I'm in creatively, like right now, is like stepping away from what you probably should be doing to do some other things because it's faster and it's gonna benefit you financially quicker, you know? Pushed me back to what I should have been doing, which is actually making art, you know? And a funny thing that actually came out of that is like stepping away from design and just focusing on my art actually got me better design projects.
Yeah.
You know, because I wasn't really thinking about it. You know, well, I wasn't pursuing it, but I think that when you just start putting creative energy out, like...
People start to
notice, yeah.
It's almost like it came full circle, man. So from kindergarten to now where you are, it all kind of like came back.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's going to, you know, it's going to keep evolving, you know? So, you know, like I have a studio that I'm paying out of, and I'm in there every single day. You know, I have a couple shows coming up. I had a big show last year, which is kind of based on me and my wife's relationship called My Boyfriend is Black, because she's Italian, and just growing up in St. Louis, that shit was crazy. But, you know, going back to some of the things that you touched on before, like I do like the American flag remix stuff and even some of the pop culture stuff, like it definitely addresses social issues, you know, but 9 times out of 10 though, when the people see my art, like I want them to like just smile and kind of feel good about it, you know? And so, which is why a lot of times music, whether it's lyrics or whether it is like those music superstars are tied into my artwork, but used in a different way that you wouldn't normally see them in, you know? So, like, two of my probably more popular pieces, and I know that you have one, that I've used, like, those pop culture icons, but in a different way, is, like, you know, in My Boyfriend is Black show, where I paired Jimi Hendrix and Jackie Kennedy, and I paired Tupac with Audrey Hepburn. It's like, you know, they were never together, and they probably, you know, they probably never even met, but I could actually see them being together, you know? And then visually, like, when you see them together, it creates such beautiful tension that I think people are drawn to it,
yeah.
You know? So I think, like, and I could be wrong, but I think, like, those are definitely two of, like, my more popular pieces that have resonated to the masses.
Yeah.
To the point where now I'm kind of getting my Warhol on where, like, those are the images that I constantly repeat, you know, in different ways, but I'll just repeat them.
Well, you know, it really is, when you look at it, like, the progression of your industries that you've gone in, right? Because you went from music to now art, and I almost look at it as, like, music is for the ears, what people can say culturally and touch on subjects that they can do in a beautiful way.
Right.
Serious topics, but make people listen to.
Right.
You're doing almost through the eyes with your art.
Right. At least that's definitely a goal. You know, that's definitely a goal. And it's like, you know, I've always told my friends that I think that, you know, like, my artwork should come with a soundtrack, because, like, you know, like I'm never not painting with music on, you know, and it's
by
like
the way,
when
that's
I'm
that's a
trying,
good idea, man. That's a good marketing idea right there.
Let me write that shit down.
Write that down right now.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, I definitely believe that it should, and it's like, you know, a lot of times, like, when I look at my art and this other artist whose work I really appreciate, it, like, I hear it when I'm looking at it.
And obviously other people are hearing it and seeing it too, because you've gotten some pretty nice clients and people that have become fans of the art, right? So what are some of the brands and people that have purchased pieces?
People that have purchased pieces that have been great, you know, collectors of mine that, you know, the world probably knows would be like Usher Raymond and T.I. and NFL, future Hall of Famer, Tequila Spikes. And, you know, going back to like L.A. Reid, Corey Glover from In Living Color, you know. And I mean, I'm sure I'm forgetting Andrew Jones, you know, from Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
I just did a big commission from him that was great. And then from a brand standpoint, you know, the biggest achievement that I think I've had as an artist to yet was having two pieces going in the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Which, by the way, is the most insane stadium. And
yeah,
I'll say, best stadium I've seen in the country.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Like, even when you see images of it at night, I mean, the shit looks like something from another world.
It's,
you know,
amazing.
So shout out to Arthur Blank for doing an incredible job for that. Shout out to the city of Atlanta for allowing him to.
So pretty much, what's next for DL? What do people need to know? What shows are coming up?
Well, I have two shows coming up. One of them is called A Million Likes, which, you know, based on social media, that's what we're all trying to get right anyway. So a million likes, and that'll be December 2nd at the Westside Cultural Arts Center. Then I'm also working on getting a show organized for Art Basel that hasn't been finalized yet, which is actually a week later. I'm going to constantly be generating work, so look forward to more American Flag remixes. You know, I'm actually working on some very, very cool ones that I'm excited about right now. And then also, you know, as a creative director, I'm doing some cool stuff, like I'm designing an educational curriculum for Motown, which is actually dope. You know, and it's about music and entrepreneurism. And so that's almost finished. And other than that, I mean, that's it. Like, I'm getting ready. I just finished the packaging design for Hustle Gang. And now I'm getting ready to start working with T.I. on his new album package.
Nice. So for those that want to follow you, keep up with you, right, how can they?
Follow me on social media at D.L. Warfield. And everything is that. And then you could also check out at American Flag Remix, where I post all of my American Flag remixes, remix work, whether it's actually artwork or Americana or me working with kids, teaching them how to make American Flag remixes. And then my design and branding social media site is goldfinger_CS. And I post some cool shit on there too. So, and if not, you can just call Justin and he'll give you
just hit me up, hit me up. But I want to thank you for coming on today, man. Much appreciation.
Absolutely.
So I'm hoping people are going to take away some amazing things from this. I know I did. And honestly, man, big fan of yours. You know that. Always going to support you. Now people need to step it up.
Let's go.
All right. Don't get the Bentley price. All right. You can
they
get,
better. Hey, the clock is ticking.
You can get it at a lower price ticking. Right now.
Arthur Blank just got two, so the price is
ticking. Price just went up.
Yeah, the price just ticking.
Nah, man. Appreciate having you on. And absolutely. Always a pleasure, man.
All right. Good luck to this.
Thank you. Thank you. Once again, I'm your host, Justin Epstein. And thank you for listening to Culturation. As always, this show has been...